Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3, Text 11. Shashtam Atre Apatyatvam Praptaha Vritaha Praptaha Anusya Anvikshikam Alarkaya Pralada Divya Uchivan Shashtamatraya Patyatvam Vritta Prapto Nasuyaya Anvikshikim Alarkaya Palada Viya Uchivan Shashtam Atre Apatya Vyam Vritta Prapto Nasuyaya Anvishikim Alarkaya Palada Divya Uchivan. Please chant. Montages. Please repeat. Shashtam, the sixth one. Atrehe, of Atri. Apatyatvam, sonship. Vrittaha, being prayed for. Praptaha, obtained. Anasuyaya, by Anasuya. Anvikshikim, on the subject of transcendence. Alarkaya, unto Alarka. Pralad Adibhyaha, unto Pralad and others. Uchivan spoke. Translation. The sixth incarnation of the Purusha was the son of the sage Atri. He was born from the womb of Anusuya, who prayed for an incarnation. He spoke on the subject of transcendence to Alarkar, Pallad, and others, Yadu, Hayai, and etc. Purport. The Lord incarnated himself as Dattatreya, the son of Rishi Atri and Anusuya. The history of the birth of Dattatreya as an incarnation of the Lord is mentioned in the Brahmanda Purana in connection with the story of the devoted wife. It is said there that Anusuya, the wife of Rishi Atri, prayed before the Lords Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva as follows. My Lords, if you are pleased with me, and if you desire me to ask from you some sort of blessing, then I pray that you combine together to become my son. This was accepted by the Lords, and as Dattatreya, the Lord expounded the philosophy of the spirit soul, and especially instructed Alarka, Prahlad, Yadu, Hayai, etc. Om Ajnana Timyandasya Gyananjana Shalakoya Chakshu Unmilita Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest ignorance. My spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. I don't know much about the subject, but I'll try my best. So in the eighth canto, chapter 14, the translation explains how in every yuga, the personality of Godhead, he actually appears in different forms of siddhas or liberated beings for a particular function. For example, he appeared as the four Kumaras to disseminate transcendental knowledge. He came as Yajnavalkya to teach the ways of karma. And it explains how he assumed the form of Dattatreya to teach the system of mystic yoga. So I was doing a little research, and within the Upanishads is one of the Upanishads is Dattatreya Upanishad, which is narrated by Lord Ramachandra to Hanuman. And in the beginning of that, Lord Brahma is asking Lord Narayan, what is the process to become free from the cycle of birth and death? So Vishnu is explaining to Lord Brahma that he himself comes in the form of Dattatreya, and that one can meditate on this form to become liberated from the samsara cycle, repetition of birth and death. So according to, in the fourth canto also, Dattatreya is explained as directly Vishnu Tattva, a direct expansion of personality of Godhead, whereas like expansions like incarnations like the four Kumaras, etc., are still within the category of Jiva Tattva. So in this purport, it's explaining how Dattatreya is actually a combination of the three guna avatars of Lord Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. So Krishna obviously has unlimited forms, and when he comes to this world, he takes on a form to serve a specific function. For example, at the end of Satya Yuga, there's a devastation, a flood that floods the whole earth, and it's supposed to destroy all life on earth and bring about a fresh yuga. So Krishna takes the form of Matsya Avatar, the fish incarnation, because fish can swim. So he takes that form for a specific function. He saves Vaivatsvata Manu and many others, and he comes to preserve and save the Vedic literature. And he comes as Lord Nrisingadev to save his pure devotee Prahlad Maharaj. And at the same time, while doing this, he preserves the benediction of his devotee Lord Brahma by coming in the half man and half lion to kill the demon Hiranyakashipu. And as Lord Ramachandra, he comes as an ideal king to teach what a perfect government would be like, a God-centered government. So thus his moral principles and his religious example serves an example for all of us to try to follow. So as we know, Krishna comes to this world for the main purpose of bringing the conditioned souls back to their natural habitat. So as eternal spiritual beings, you know, coming into this material world, we're in like an awkward situation. This is not our natural habitat. These material bodies are compared to like prison suits. Actually, the Sanskrit word anartha literally translates to unwanted things. So this body itself is actually an anartha. It's unwanted for the soul. It's unnecessary to actually have a material body. So Prabhupada actually gives this example of a fish out of water. You know, and water is obviously the natural habitat for a fish. But if out of illusion, the fish thinks that he'll enjoy more on land than within his natural habitat, even if you give that fish a fresh new car and money and a couple fish girlfriend, he's not going to be happy until he goes back to his natural habitat. So it's the same thing with us in this material world. We're trying to find happiness in the objects of the senses, ignorant to the fact that true bliss actually lies within our dormant relationship with Krishna. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that whenever and wherever there's a decline in religious practice and a rise in irreligion, then he appears. And in the next verse, he says, Parityanaya sarunam vinishaya chaduskantam dharma samstapanarthiya sambhavami yuge yuge. To annihilate the miscreants and to deliver the pious, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, he appears in every millennium as himself, comes himself. So Krishna comes to enlighten the conditioned souls, and he personally comes in his Vishnu Tattva expansions. He also sends his empowered representatives, the Shakti Vesh avatar. Shakti actually means power, and Avesh means endowed. So these are living entities who are equipped with certain special power to execute the mission of the Lord. So, and he also manifests himself through the Vedic literature, namely Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. But in this age of Kali, he especially comes as the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Narottam Das Thakur says, Golokera Premadana Harinam Sankirtan, that these names of Krishna actually have nothing to do with this material world. They're coming directly from Goloka Vrindavan. And in the 11th canto, it explains that Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishnam Sango Pangastra Parshadam Yagya Sankirtanam Prayer Yajanti Hi Sumedasaha. That in this age of Kali, the intelligent people will perform congregational chanting of the Lord's holy names and worship the personality of Godhead, who is constantly chanting and dancing and singing the names of Krishna. And although he appears not to be blackish in this incarnation, he's considered Krishna himself. So the Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled approximately 5,000 years ago, and it actually predicts the future. Like, for example, later in the same chapter, it will explain the incarnation of Lord Buddha, who appeared 2,600 years ago, meaning 2,400 years after the Bhagavatam was written, he appeared. But Bhagavatam predicts Lord Buddha, tells what his name's going to be, the dynasty he appears in, the place he appears in, and what his mission will be. So similarly, this verse I just quoted from the 11th canto is predicting the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Gauranga is the most recent appearance of Lord Krishna. It came a little over 500 years ago. And he introduced the Sankirtan movement. So one of the most important disciples of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Rupa Goswami, he describes how Lord Chaitanya is the most merciful incarnation, because he's giving what no other incarnation has given before, pure love of Godhead, basically free to anyone who's just willing to accept it. So it's actually a miracle. Like this painting up on the wall, or up on the ceiling here, you know, Lord Chaitanya was traveling through Jarikhand Forest, and he was making four-legged animals chant, dance, and sing Krishna's holy names, and actually, like, the deer and the... It explains that the deer and the lions were hugging each other and embracing out of ecstasy, out of love. So similarly, people of this Kali Yuga are more or less acting like animals, but this Krishna consciousness movement is a direct incarnation of Lord Chaitanya. And just by coming in contact with this movement, these animal-like people are chanting and dancing and becoming pure Brahmanas and pure Vaishnavas. So this is actually the purpose of this movement. All the way, starting from Krishna to Lord Brahma to Narada to Vyasadeva, all the way down to our Srila Prabhupada, all these great souls, their mission is to somehow or another find a means to attract living entities to come back to their natural habitat. So by taking up the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and spreading these teachings to every town and village, one can also become an empowered incarnation. One can be used as a pure instrument, like a guitar. A guitar is an instrument, but what is a guitar? It's just wood that's carved in a certain way with chords and some metal pieces on it. If it's not used and it's just laying around, it basically has no value. It's just useless. It's actually like in the way. But if an expert musician picks that guitar up and starts to play it, then beautiful sounds come out and musical vibrations. It could change the whole mood and the atmosphere of wherever the music's being played. So similarly, you know, we're picked up by our spiritual master, and if we surrender to the process of being used as an instrument, you know, Krishna and the spiritual master could use us in so many wonderful ways. And I was like meditating recently on Bhakti Tirtha Swami, who's a perfect example of this, what I'm talking about. You know, he such a sincere soul. He was sent, well, first of all, before he was sent to Europe, he had a very austere lifestyle just because he wanted to serve Prabhupada in the best way. He was performing traveling sankirtan. He was on the library party, distributing full sets of Prabhupada's books to different universities and colleges. And his schedule, according to that book, The Black Lotus, and in a class I heard from Radhanath Swami, that Bhakti Tirtha Swami's schedule was that he would wake up around 2 in the morning, he would chant at least 40 rounds a day, and he would be out on the college campus before one person, before any students were there, and he would stay on the campus until all the students had left the campus, because he didn't want to miss one person that he can give Prabhupada's books to. And then at the end of the day, after all the students left, then he would take prasadam for the first time, and for the first time of the day, he would take some fruits and nuts, and then he would read, and he'd stay up late reading, and he maintained that schedule for a long time, until he saw that other devotees couldn't keep up with him, and he didn't want to feel that the other devotees felt that Bhakti Tirtha Swami was better than them, so he arranged his schedule to make the other devotees feel like they could fit in. But after a while, Maharaj was sent to Eastern Europe, which at that time was a heavy communist country. Religion was banned. If you were caught distributing any type of religious books or teaching any religious philosophy, you can go to prison for many years. And there's been instances where devotees were caught, they were tortured. Even some of them even died in prison because of the torture that was going on. So he took the risk as a black African American, and going to Eastern Europe at that time, there was like no black body people. He was one of the only ones, but he was going undercover to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books, and he was living in such a way that he went alone. There was hardly any devotees. He didn't meet any devotees when he went there. There were no temples at that time. There was no congregation of devotees because they had to keep everything low-key. So he came alone. He was living in freight trains so that he wouldn't be... people wouldn't think he was suspicious and he wouldn't be caught in his mission. He would have to chant japa very quietly in public restrooms, whispering to himself so he wouldn't be caught. And there's many times where he actually got almost caught by like the KGB, which is like equivalent to like the FBI in America. One time he was distributing at a university and he saw some official looking people that were following him. And after a while he realized that, oh, this is the KGB. And if I don't do something quick, I'm going to get caught. So immediately He acted like he didn't see them. And upon coming to a corner of the wall, right when he turned the corner, he started running as fast as he could. And when he started running, he heard the footsteps of these people running after him. And he had to take another, he had to turn another corner, run down a hallway, doing all these zigzags. And finally, he realized, I'm about to get caught. So the next corner he turned in, the first door he saw, he opened up and he went inside. And when he went inside the door, he looked through the little window and he saw that the KGB people ran past the door. They didn't see that he went inside. So he felt kind of safe. But when he turned around, he saw this very official-looking person sitting behind a desk. And the guy was shocked. He was like, who are you? And Bhaktitirtha Maharaj, with Krishna gave him the intelligence, he looked at his watch and he said, well, it's 3:30 and I have an appointment with you. And the guy was thinking, well, I didn't hear of any appointment. And Maharaj was saying, well, yeah, I called your secretary and I set up an appointment and it's 3:00, so I'm here. I'm supposed to have an appointment. And the guy was like bewildered. He was like, okay, well, what do you have to say? And Maharaj actually convinced them to take a whole set of Srila Prabhupada's books. And through all this struggle and being undercover and all these austerities, still he was one of the topmost book distributors in the world. At that time, Srila Prabhupada was sick, he was ill, and Tamal Krishna Goswami was reading the Sankirtan scores to Srila Prabhupada. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj was saying that Srila Prabhupada, although he was sick, when he would hear these scores, he'd become enlivened. And oftentimes he would, start crying in ecstasy. And so when Bhaktitirtha Maharaj came back to the U.S., Tamal Krishna Goswami set up a meeting with Maharaj and Srila Prabhupada, because Prabhupada was so pleased with Bhaktitirtha Maharaj's service. At that time his name was Ghanashyam Brahmachari. And Prabhupada, when he saw Maharaj, he told him to come here and he gave him a hug. And Prabhupada actually started crying. And he said, because of all your service, your life is actually successful. And Prabhupada hugged Maharaj and he started crying. He said, because of all your tremendous service, your life is now successful. And when Prabhupada left this planet eventually, Bhaktitirtha Maharaj, a couple years after that, had a dream where Srila Prabhupada appeared in his dream. And Srila Prabhupada was there, and then there was a wall with like a door. And Prabhupada told Maharaj, open the door. And Maharaj first didn't understand, why he was telling him this. And Prabhupada repeated twice more, just please open the door, open the door. So Maharaj opened the door in his dream. And when he opened the door, hundreds and thousands of African people were running through the door. And Maharaj got the inspiration and the indication from this dream that Prabhupada wants him to go to Africa to preach. So Maharaj went to Africa and he did tremendous service. Traveled around Africa at a time where there was like wars going on, people were getting caught and killed, their heads being severed. Crazy stuff was going on. But he was traveling through Africa and making tons of devotees. He actually became the head chief of many tribes of Africa and taught them, to practice Krishna consciousness. Even the last days of his life, Maharaj taught us the example of, how to leave your body in Krishna consciousness. He even gave the seminar called Die Before Dying. It's an amazing class. If no one's heard it, I highly recommend it. It's like change your life. So we can see so many disciples of Srila Prabhupada just by taking the order serious and surrendering to Srila Prabhupada's instructions, they actually become empowered. There's many people in this room actually that have become empowered instruments of Srila Prabhupada. Another person that I'm very inspired by is someone named Harinamananda. In Europe, he basically is famous for distributing the most books per day than anyone in history. He was doing 200, 300 big books a day. And at one point, a few times, he did like over 900, almost 1,000 big books in one day, which is very amazing. And someone asked him, what's the secret of doing so many books? And he simply said that to realize that it's the desire of Krishna, it's the desire of all the Vaishnavas, and the desire of the spiritual master that these books go out, that all these people get the mercy. So realizing that you're not the doer, that Krishna's the doer, and just try not to get in the way. Try not to let your false ego get in the way of the flow of mercy. And in this way, you could just become an instrument and let the mercy flow through you. So just kind of like compared to like a window, you know, the sun shines through the window. But if the window is dirty, then the sunshine doesn't have its full potency. So, you know, Prabhupada says the purity is the force. If our heart is pure, if our consciousness is pure, then we can actually be used as a pure instrument. So the reason why I'm saying all this is because these incarnations that we're talking about in this third chapter all come for a specific function. And all these functions are meant to serve one purpose. All these functions are meant to serve one purpose, which is to ultimately bring the conditioned souls back home, back to Godhead. And that's all I want to say today. Thank you very much for letting me speak. If there's any questions, please ask. It's Bhakti Chris.
Hey, Bolt, it was an excellent class, Prabhu. And I just want to more make a comment because you really touched me on something that I've been thinking a lot about lately. And the inspiration part, as far as you know, with hearing stories about that Swami and hearing stories about other individuals or seeing actions from other individuals, you yourself being one for me that I personally, when I see the way you act. Through all types of situations and the knowledge that you have, the young age that you are, and how much emphasis and excitement and enthusiasm you put into Krishna consciousness. Me, as a neophyte devotee, that really inspires me. And I'm going to tell a quick story. Before I got here to the temple, I didn't have a temple very near me. It was more than 2 hours away. There were two temples in North Carolina, and I was kind of away. So I had to, I used the internet mostly. To get my information, and I've told you the story, but I found His Holiness Radha Swami, his videos, and I was so attracted to his videos that actually there were several times I didn't even go into work because I stayed up so late watching His Holiness's videos. And there was such an attraction there that when it became time for me to have the ability to actually join the ashram, being so inexperienced, I didn't know any better. I contacted his Facebook page, his messenger service, to ask if I could do it and where I would go. And so one of his disciples ran the page and discussed with me and, you know, asked me where I went through the process and it worked out and I was able to come here. But the point is, seeing things like that and hearing people like that, it's such an inspiration to new devotees. And then sometimes, though, I'm going to say something a little negative and I'll probably be chastised, but I'm going to say it anyway. I've also seen examples of senior devotees and Prabhupada disciples who gave me the total opposite feeling, and it took away all the hope inside my chest. And there were times when I thought, if this guy can't do it, how could someone like me ever do it? So it works both ways. And the point is that sometimes we may be the only example of ISKCON that anyone ever sees. We may be the only example of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya or Krishna himself that anyone ever has a chance to see. So be careful, because someone's always watching and someone's always listening, and I am especially. And a lot of times when I don't have the experience and the love of Krishna in my heart like as much as I would like, I look towards my association to find it. And so I'm watching and I'm listening, and I need the inspiration. Thank you, Prabhu.
Yeah, really wonderful class, Prabhu. I just wanted to say that, you know, having the opportunity to travel with you and see the way that you operate, I can genuinely say that I'm watching every day how you yourself are becoming an instrument of Krishna. And it's really inspiring that I get that association. And so all I can say is thank you for inspiring so many individuals, and thank you for, you know, taking the tasks to try to bring new bhaktas into the ashram and just doing so many wonderful things. You're a really amazing example for all of us. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your kind words. I learned from Amala Bhakta Maharaj that if someone gives you kind words, you should accept them, but not keep them for yourself, because otherwise they turn to poison in your heart. So if someone gives you kind words, accept them, being respectful, but give them to your spiritual master. So thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Hare Krishna. All glories to Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.